Welcome to the World Bank EdTech Podcast, a conversation on the use of technology and innovation in education globally. My name is Bob Hawkins, and I'm the Global Lead for Technology and Innovation in Education at the World Bank. This is the first podcast where we're having a direct conversation with youth, and it couldn't be more pertinent with the rise of AI over the last year and a half or so. So today's discussion, we're going to explore some of the challenges and opportunities from the perspective of a student from Addis Ababa University, Rahel Mamo, and a student from the Africa Leadership University, Damileri Oyedele. This is a particularly important topic for us as we at the World Bank have focused on two key pillars in our EdTech strategy, one being the use of technology to support countries to develop more resilient education systems, and the other to support countries in thinking about and developing relevant skills for a very uncertain future. Specifically, what is the role of digital skills and how are countries and the education systems responding to the demands we're seeing in the marketplace? And obviously, forefront in the last year on the uncertainties around the skills landscape is the emergence of AI. The team at the World Bank has engaged in a process to begin to better understand how students and universities across the world, and particularly in Africa, are grappling with this new change. We have with us my colleague, Momo. So Momo, let me bring you into the conversation first, as you're helping to lead this work that that we're doing with a number of students around the world. I wonder if you can share with our listeners just a bit about your background and a bit on the focus group study, as well as some of the more interesting perspectives that you're hearing from the students.
Thanks a lot, Bob. So my name is Momo Betran. I am an education specialist within the World Bank Group. Previously, I worked in West Africa directly with government supporting education projects of the World Bank. But as Bob mentioned, I'm also involved with the education technology team at the bank. And we are working on a global study, having focus group discussions with hundreds of students around the globe. And honestly, Bob, we've had very interesting insights. First, you know, when ChatGPT came out, everyone was talking about how students were going to use the application to cheat. But what we are finding out is the range of use is very, very, very wide. So we see students using it to convert their PDF notes into audible versions that they can listen to on the go. You know, computer science students using it to debug codes and learn new languages faster. Generative AI is not just being used as a cheating tool. And that's an interesting insight that we got. And one other thing that we are getting from this focus group discussions is that students are acutely aware of the risks. And I'm not just talking about risks within the education space, like, for example, the dependency on AI and like how it can impact critical thinking. But we see students are talking about how it's going to impact the labor market and how ultimately it could lead to a concentration of power among maybe tech giants. And one last thing that we're also getting, in some of the universities where we had the focus group discussions, students are receiving some guidance on how to use AI for learning, how AI is impacting the job market. But in most cases, there's a sense of frustration that universities are not doing enough to prepare students for a world where AI is having major impact in our daily lives. So those are some of the insights. We're in the middle of the study right now, but already very interesting insights.
That's fascinating, Momo. I think everyone's very much looking forward to seeing the results of all of the discussions in these focus groups. We're lucky to have two of those students with us here today. So I want to move the conversation to Rahel to maybe reflect on a little bit of what Momo shared with us. But please give us a little bit of your own background, what you're studying, maybe one hope and one fear that you have with regard to the use of AI and its impact on teaching and learning.
Thank you so much, Bob. So just to give you a brief about myself, I have a background in both engineering and economics. When it comes to the benefits of AI, I am able to research using the AI. And the one trait I think is the fact that we're relying more on the use of AI from day to day.
Now, Rahel, how has your research changed? I mean, in my days, I would go to the stacks in the library and pull out books and try to find relevant passages. With the emergence of the internet and Google, research has opened up a world of possibilities. How is AI now changing the way that you're conducting research.
So now we're able to get access to a lot of resources on ChatGPT, Gemini, and other AI tools. Because in Ethiopia, we don't have access to financial payments. We don't have access to research that are on a paid version. Therefore, we can get summaries of those very important research.
Okay, so you're using ChatGPT to get around firewalls on research journals that are not accessible without some form of digital payment. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And what was your fear? I'm sorry, I missed your fear.
My fear is we're getting too much dependent on those AI tools. It could be as simple as writing simple reports, simple emails. We mainly depend on those sources.
No, this is a fear of mine as well. I think that writing is really a form of thinking. And if we completely outsource our writing, are we outsourcing our thinking? But by the same token, I think of it as an assistant to kind of brainstorm and reflect on ideas and maybe get down incoherent thoughts that could be made a bit more coherent. What has been your experience with writing and using AI?
I like bringing my ideas and giving it a sense of my own touch. Of course, it's my own idea. However, to have like a very good writing, I could give it a prompt and AI would automatically make it really good.
Excellent. Let me bring Damilary into the discussion. I wonder if you can introduce yourself, a little bit of your background, and maybe you can move beyond education to the future of work. A lot of our work at the World Bank looks at what are the skills and skill gaps for the future of work. And I'd be interested as a student, what are your reflections on how AI might be changing the skills you think you need and how you might apply those skills for your own future employment?
Awesome. Hi, I'm Damilary Oyedele. I'm a Mastercard Foundation Scholar at African Leadership University, Kigali, Rwanda, where I'm studying global challenges. My research focuses on library policy in sub-Saharan Africa. Also, I call myself a librarypreneur because I run a nonprofit where we harness technology and citizen engagement approaches to make libraries more vibrant and viable in African countries. So, reflecting on my journey as a student, this further connotes the need for, you know, continuous growth on learn and relearn. As a librarypreneur working on tech solutions to support libraries, to build capacity of librarians to not only use tech tools to offer library services, but to also be creators of library tech solution. And I must say, Bob, I can recall during my teenage years and my early 20s, I learned how to use computer by going to browse in cyber cafes. And I'm talking about like over a decade ago. Now, fast forward to 2024, with the advent of various AI tools, I see it as a blessing for the future of work, all right, in the context of platforms and tools that we use in our daily lives now to enhance productivity and delivery. For instance, Bob, I do not have to read a whole 100-page document to get pointers that I need to make informed decisions. There are AI platforms that can do this for me, among other functionalities. So personally, for me, this platform are enhancing productivity for us as humans to focus our creativity on other complex global challenges. And the time I'm going to spend on reading 100-page documents can be spent on doing some other impactful endeavors. This further connotes that the need for us to learn how to use these AI tools appropriately as it opens more opportunities to create a future where we access more possibilities to create more jobs.
Thanks, Damilary. I'm curious. I'm sure our listeners are also curious of what is a librarypreneur. And, you know, I started off the conversation with Rahel around the evolution of research. You expressed the importance of a community space of libraries, and you also mentioned internet cafes as a community space to access knowledge. Now, when I was younger, I would spend a lot of time in libraries, but I would enjoy the quiet. I would enjoy being by myself. I would enjoy reading a book slowly, reflecting. And the image that you're portraying, I see people coming to the library with stacks of books, but going to a computer or their cell phone, not to devour the book or to reflect on it or to read it slowly, but to ask AI to give a quick summary of it, to, as you say, make knowledge consumption more productive. As a librarypreneur, how are you reconciling some of these issues with regard to kind of the traditional role of libraries and this new emerging role of libraries? And how do you see it as a space that can support, as you say, entrepreneurs to be able to access knowledge, connect with others, and ultimately create solutions to many of the complex problems that all of our countries face?
Interestingly, Bob, libraries over time have continued to evolve, right? E-library platforms, online platforms to engage users. However, in our age and time, libraries are also evolving to be a community hub for innovation and co-creation, not just a space where you go to access books on the shelf, right? Libraries are bringing in programs, innovative approaches to further engage their users. Libraries have been able to evolve because we've prioritized capacity development and how we apply data skills and capacity to make libraries thrive. A personal example I'm going to make is what we do at Library Aid Africa with three librarians across the continent through what we called Young African Library Leaders Fellowship. Recently, we did a survey to understand the emerging skills that librarians need, not just to offer services, but also to create tools. And that led us to create a program called Library X Africa that seeks to empower librarians in Africa and global south with the digital skills needed for libraries to improve. So these are innovative ways libraries are improving. So a vibrant ecosystem where you access information remotely or in the library spaces, and we have development capacity program to further enhance growth in society. So libraries are not just a quiet, boring space anymore. I must say, libraries are advancing to be an innovative, fun environment for all.
Thanks, Demoleri. I'm wondering how all of the introverts who are listening to our podcast are feeling about your future vision of the library. But both of you as youth, Rahel and Demoleri, really represent what I think is clear as the opportunity and the challenge in Africa with the incredible demographic dividend that will be coming between now and 2050, where at least 40% of the world's workforce will be in Africa. And I think the reality for education systems is that it's going to be very challenging, if not impossible, to build enough schools and to train and hire enough teachers to meet this demographic surge. So I think what you're describing as libraries and other community spaces as kind of alternative access points for education and the potential of AI to complement what might be the role of a teacher. I don't think you can ever take the human element out of teaching, because at the end of the day, education is a social endeavor, but it'll certainly change what humans do with regard to engaging, inspiring, helping, supporting students on their journey and quest for knowledge. Is this something that you see as a potential future to address this challenge and this opportunity in Africa, Demoleri?
Of course, yes. Demands are improving. And now also we serve out-of-school youth using these community spaces and library spaces as alternative source for education and empowerment, okay? My experience growing up as a kid, I did have access to a library in my primary secondary school stages, and that really affected my reading culture. And as a matter of fact, I had speech defects growing up to that. I get to know about libraries when I was in college, and I would go to the library space, access information on my own. And I love the space, the quietness, the engagement, intellectual conversation, the people you connect with in the library space, and exploring knowledge. And how that has transformed myself as a person over time is so enormous. So if we now have library spaces for alternative education located in communities, this poses a very huge transformational experience that would further build an informed literate community that will be empowered to contribute meaningfully to the socioeconomic development of the society.
Thanks, Demoleri. Momo, I'd love to bring you back into this conversation on this very point. I mean, from our work at the World Bank and our engagement with governments, I'd love to hear your reflections on how governments should be thinking about AI in education. And what actions do you think they should be taking or preparing for this future? Momo, what are your thoughts?
Maybe I'll just piggyback first on what Damilare was saying on how libraries should evolve in the face of AI. I think it's very similar to what I believe should happen in schools. So over the past 60 or 70 years, there's been this huge debate on what is the goal of education? You know, is it just an enterprise to build human capital, or is there like a humanistic objective? And we've gone back and forth. But one thing that's coming out clearly is that in an age where machines can think, it's really time to create education systems that don't just teach people to have the right answers, but to ask the right questions that complement so with soft skills and how to live together in society. So I think that's a paradigm shift that will have to happen. And of course, that would have to be reflected in policy documents, in the thinking of governments. But concretely in AI, we need policies, we need regulation. But beyond policies, I think that there's this conversation around infrastructure, right? So we've been doing these focus group discussions on AI virtually, mostly. And it's been really hard to have a conversation without an interruption, either in internet or electricity access. And it just grounds the point that, you know, you can't really ensure that the benefits of AI trickle down to everyone unless you have equitable access to infrastructure. In many of the countries where we work, you see 60 to 80% of students have no internet access. But what really makes the difference between equitable and safe access on the one hand, and equitable and safe use on the other hand, is really culture and people. So I think that there should really be a focus on how do we ensure that people have the right knowledge, the right skills, and the right incentives to use AI for good in education to actually improve outcomes. And sometimes I feel like it starts with baby steps. Like last year, for example, in the Gambia, there were some constraints in terms of the amount of funding that was available to illustrate some images in a textbook. And we used Midjourney, and we're able to meet our deadline and print books, and it benefits the tens of thousands of students. And it came with the right attitude, right? So the teams were empowered, they understood the potential benefits. So yes, infrastructure is critical. Yes, we need regulation urgently, but invest in people and culture can really matter. And in my experience working in technology and education, sometimes we feel like we need to have the whole regulation, like the five-year plan ready before we can run a pilot. In the case of AI, especially because it's moving at such an exponential speed, baby steps like, you know, AI awareness days, consultations or audits on current use can be done within, you know, 1 week or a month. So we shouldn't wait to have a full plan before starting to explore the risks and benefits of AI in education systems. So that's, in my opinion, what government should focus on.
No, thanks, Momo. That's fascinating. So a lot to unpack in all of those points that you raise. Let me maybe start with the importance of instilling a culture of innovation, of risk-taking, of learning, I think is really important. And the fact that you may never have it completely right, and you really can't wait until all of the conditions are perfect. The other that you highlight around your work in the Gambia using Midjourney, which is a text-to-image software, and the potential to really democratize content development, including storytelling. And the third point is the huge challenge of infrastructure. It is an incredible technology when you think about the fact that you can access ChatGPT with a cell phone and have a virtual tutor at your fingertips, but it is a server-side technology. So you need to be able to have that connectivity. And more importantly, you need to be able to pay for that connectivity, which are still major constraints. And on the regulation side, how do you balance the risks versus the opportunities, which is kind of the similar question to how do you develop this culture of innovation in ministries? And I think ultimately what you highlighted at the beginning around the change in education from one based on answers to one based on questions. So maybe Momo, just a follow-up on kind of how you see what might be a small step, as you say, to changing this culture.
Thanks a lot, Bob. I'm going to use the Gambia example because the culture question really ties in well. I used to work in consulting and communication, and I had this understanding that just providing information to people doesn't make them to change their behaviors, right? So if you come into a ministry and you bombard them with statistics and numbers and information on the potential for AI, no one's going to move a finger. But I think when you adopt a change management perspective, you can really make a difference. Like, you know, create a sense of urgency, identify champions, create opportunities for early success, communicate, and provide, you know, scaffold. So in the Gambia, for example, we had a situation where there was a sense of urgency. We didn't have enough funding. The academic year was approaching, so we really had to meet the deadline to print the textbooks. So that sense of urgency can be replicated in many areas, right? I feel that sometimes there's a disconnect between the conversation on technology and the why. If we can really emphasize, you know, that this 90% or 80% learning poverty and all the other challenges that we know, and connect that directly to how the technological solutions can help fill the gap, I think it creates some movement. Also, identifying early champions is critical. Probably the biggest contributor to success in the case of the Gambia was demonstration and early success, because I feel like we need to think creatively about some of the very stubborn issues. One part we should definitely explore is how can we have offline solutions that don't require access to internet, but still, you know, will not hallucinate, especially in themes that don't need to be updated. So I think having that dialogue with the private sector would be critical. And on the question of regulation, there's going to be an explosion in terms of the needs of education in many emerging markets. The education budgets are shrinking. We have to be daring, and I don't think education is probably the most daring sector, Bob, you would agree. In terms of policy, one thing I've noticed is we tend to look at governments as a monolith, but in many countries, policies are developed by lawmakers. I think it is very critical, especially now, to build the AI skills, AI literacy awareness of lawmakers, because they have a huge responsibility. Lawmakers will play a critical role because they will ultimately have to pass those legislations. So I think it's critical to build their skills.
I agree. You know, our EdTech strategy is called Reimagining Human Connections. So the critical role of people in engaging people together. And that translates also to another principle in that paper, which is engage the ecosystem. And I do think there is a space for leadership and for innovation as well as incentives. But let me bring Rahel back into this conversation, because I'm very curious from a student's perspective, how you see the future. We all kind of have this interior voice and imagine ourselves 5-10 years in the future and kind of what's our ideal work-life scenario. I wonder if I can put you on the spot and if you can share with us a little bit about what is your vision and how do you kind of imagine the role of technology, the skills you hope to develop, and the type of life that you hope to create for yourself?
So the kind of future is a future that has technology and AI and other updates. I aim to integrate use of technology, also to have a good prompting skill so that I can make my life easier. In terms of having a vision for my country, I would like to see changes in infrastructure. So when I say this, I would mainly point out the factor of access to electricity. When we don't have that, bringing the discussion of AI and technology is just far-fetched. So the first vision I have is to see access to electricity, to good education, healthcare, agriculture. So once I get to see that, I also aim to see democratization of access to AI and technology in the coming future.
And you personally, what role would you like to play in creating that future?
Every time I have one of those discussions about AI with someone that have just a beginner knowledge, the threat is so much more understood than the benefits. So I want to be able to work with the government or work with other organizations such as the World Bank, the UN, in creating that awareness within my country. And a lot of work could be done in terms of bringing that knowledge about AI, having institutions that intensively give AI courses. So I would very much like to work on this case. And I believe I can also contribute a lot. Even our educational institutions have not recognized the use of AI well, and there is no specific course that is tailored to AI implementation.
Thanks, Rahel. I mean, I think that change is a given and change is accelerating. So I think that's an admirable role for you to be a change maker, so to speak. On the same token, I do think that sometimes there can be too much technology. Do you ever find yourself just overwhelmed and wanting to kind of go find one of Damilare's libraries without the computers and find a quiet corner and just be by yourself?
Yeah, sometimes it's important to stay away from technology, take a time to breathe, have that moment of clarity with yourself. It could be in a library, in a park. However, our internet access won't allow us to have that much intensive experience with technology. So I don't think that would be a worry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, again, I think the importance of human connections can never be replaced. Although this is virtual, I hope to see both of you someday face to face. Damilare, you're from Nigeria, correct?
Yes, correct.
So let me ask you to imagine yourself as the president of Nigeria, and kind of building off some of the issues that Momo raised. What actions would you take as president to ensure that your country has a prosperous future in the face of the change that we're talking about and kind of this discussion around how to prepare a society for an uncertain future where certainly technical and digital skills will be a part of it?
So imagine I'm the president of the Federal Republic of Nigeria. The actions I would take, we align one from the policy point of view, right, in the context of enabling policies and regulatory frameworks that are prepared to progress. My second point would be around education, because education plays a huge role here. Investment in education and skills development around STEM, curriculum review, to incorporate digital skills, coding, AI education from an early stage would be priority. And also promoting lifelong learning programs to upskill the existing workforce. And more importantly, too, as we do this, engaging and expanding this also to out-of-school youth to adapt to the demands of the digital economy. Aligning with this also, the need for research and innovation and working with educational institutions and libraries to make it possible. My third action as a president would be to develop digital infrastructure for us to maximize the potential of technology change, okay? Bridging the digital divide is a priority to drive progress forward on this. And my last call for action would be fostering entrepreneurship through incubation, accelerator programs, and venture capital funding. Not forgetting the essential roles of mentorship and market opportunities that will also empower young entrepreneurs and also create wealth and create jobs around them.
Love it. Fantastic, Damilare. You're elected. You get my vote. I think it's very inspiring, Damilare, to invest in infrastructure, to create a culture of innovation and entrepreneurship, and to really focus on the whole of society and all of those citizens that will require opportunities for lifelong learning, and the reality that exists now of the large number of students that are out of school, that for whatever reason, the education didn't respond to their needs. Let me ask Rahel, do you have a call to action?
So probably my call to action would be to companies that work on AI integration, AI awareness creation, a message to them saying, if you're actually interested in addressing a large number of people who actually want to be employed with that specific area, Africa would be a good target, please. So that is one call to action I have. And the second one is to emphasize on the points you made earlier, Bob. We should never forget the human element of it. We are humans and our human interactions are basic for our existence. So these are my two call to action.
Thanks, Rahel. Momo, I'm going to give you the last word. You can choose a call to action, or if you want to share a podcast that you think might be interesting for our listeners to check out.
I would say Hard Fork. It's a New York Times podcast on artificial intelligence. It's very lighthearted and very fun, but also very insightful. And in terms of call to action, generative AI is here to stay. And whether you work in education directly or you're more involved in policy making linked to education, we have to face that reality. And my call to action would be, think of what you can do in the next week, the next month, and the next academic year to support the safe and responsible use of AI in education. Don't only think about budget-heavy, time-intensive actions. Think of little actions that you can do next week, next month, to support your school, your ministry, or your country to mitigate risks, but also reap the benefits of artificial intelligence for learning.
Thanks, Momo. That's fantastic. Be curious and take action. So I'd like to thank all of you for joining us for this discussion. Momo, Rahel, Damileri, it's been a fascinating discussion on youth perspectives on the future of AI and its impact on skills and potential employment. I just want to thank all of you for taking the time to have this conversation with us today.
Thank you so much, Bob. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. Nice to be here.